Hello and welcome to our office hours for the month of January 2019. It's our first one in the year 2019. And this is for all of you who are members of the various INE, Institute of Nutritional Endocrinology programs. So the way that these calls work is that you can ask me, you know, pretty much anything. If I don't have an answer, I'll always tell you, I'll get back or where to find it. My goal is to not just give you answers, but to teach you how to find those answers within the vast knowledge in your own brains and within the vast knowledge that we have in medical journals and online and et cetera, et cetera. So I'm here to support you in whatever questions you have. And the way that it works is you go and do a *2 on your telephone keypad, and that will raise your hand. Lynn can probably remind you better if you're on the web call, because I always forget there's a place where you can say raise hand. And Eleanor knows because she just did it. So Lynn, if you want to just come on and tell them how to raise their hand if they're on the web call. And meanwhile, while you do that, I'm going to look at the Q&A.
Yes, so if you are listening using the web call, there is a button. You'll see things like disconnect or raise hands, that type of thing. And so they've made it really, really easy for us now that we can get on and it's not as complicated as it used to be. So there are a few questions that I've been just now putting in to the Q&A that are on the chat.
Oh, beautiful. Thank you. Then I have one place to look. That makes it easier.
Exactly.
All right, so the way we usually work is there's a Q&A, and it's off to the side, and we've asked people if they can't make it to the call or they think you're going to be late or anyway, for whatever reason, put it in there in advance. So usually I like to do is go through the ones that were submitted in advance, and I see one from Dora in Montreal. And then I will go and go back and forth between the Q&A and the chat and the calls and raising your hand. So I see two people have raised their hands, so I just want to acknowledge that I see them, Eleanor and Dr. L03 and Myersville. That must be, it says wireless caller, and I know who that is. And I'm just trying to make my connections in my brain between the various locations. Simone. All right, so I'm going to go and do the one question that's in advance, and then I'll go back and forth, and I'll refresh. So Dora in Montreal, hello, could you please comment on ketogenic diet effect on the microbiome, as it includes a lot of sources of starch and resistant starch that friendly bacteria feed on? Yeah, so very good and timely question, Dora, because I'm opening up and leading a 5-day keto challenge, a healthy keto challenge, which is more of a green plant-based keto challenge. There's a lot of effects on what we eat on the microbiome, and in particular, the amount of fibers that we eat, not necessarily starch, but the fibers that we eat. The typical way that a ketogenic diet is practiced, I call it the bacon butter diet, they have vegetables or condiments to all of the fats, and there's a lot of oil and there's a lot of fat, and I believe that that really does throw the microbiome off. I believe that we need a lot of the plant fibers to help our body to feed our bifidobacter and other things in our colons and keep a good healthy microbiome. So I think that a typical ketogenic diet, the way you might see it, there's several programs that are now coming out. A lot of people are putting out their keto programs. I saw one the other day called Ketox. And he claims that the problem with the diets is that there are not enough veggies, that most keto diets, and he claims to address that, but when in reality I actually bought the program because I was $47 or $97 or something like that, I bought the program just to see, and in fact, the recipes are, you know, bacon cheeseburger related, bacon cheeseburger on lettuce, and I really believe that that's better than the ones I've seen that don't include much of that at all, but still it's just paying lip service to the vegetable piece, and the fibers are important. If you are going to do potatoes and do like cook them and put them in the refrigerator to create more resistant starch, you might be able to include that in a ketogenic diet. And like low glycemic diets, you got to measure. Most of these diets out there are not telling people to measure, but you need to get like a Keto Mojo and have people measure what they need to do to stay in keto, in a ketogenic state, because it's different from person to person. One person might be able to eat 150 grams of carbohydrate a day, but it's mostly vegetables, and stay in keto because the fiber is what's keeping them there, whereas other people who might need to be below 50 grams or 5 grams or 10 grams, and it's very different from person to person. There's also a period of keto adaptation where the body gets used to and has to be trained basically to now burn fat. And some people need to have a 3 to 5 day water fast to get into ketosis quickly, or it takes them a month to get into ketosis. So it varies from person to person. I personally, myself, and spend most of the time in a state of nutritional ketosis, meaning my ketones are between 0.5, usually between 1 and 2.5 or 3. And our sweet spot diet gets people into that state. Many people, not all people, the people that respond really quickly and start to lose the weight quickly are doing so because they tend to get into a mild ketogenic state where they're burning fat and they're getting efficient at it, whereas other people have to do a lot more to get into that state. And like I said, some people need to jumpstart it with fasting, or, you know, just kind of a really low or intermittent fasting for long periods of time. But here's the thing, it all affects the microbiome. And if you're going to be on a diet that's primarily, you know, fat, and it's got a lot of oil in it and not a lot of vegetables and not a lot of fiber, it's going to affect the microbiome very negatively. So thank you for that question, Dora. I'm going to go back to the people with their hands up. And, oh, we lost one. It looks like Dr. Allie took her hand down. So happy to talk to you, Allie, but your hand is down now. So Eleanor, howdy, Eleanor.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can.
Oh, good, that's good to know. I actually have some logistic questions. I'm trying to get organized with my studies, and I have two logistic questions. I know I came in late on the get on track call, if you know what I mean, the other night, and
yep.
I'm wondering, was there a lecture or something that I need to go back and look at?
There was nothing to look at. Lynn, I don't know how late you came in. I know that Lynn did go in and did some screen share. So depending on how late you got in, you know, if it was within the first 5 minutes, then probably not. But if you were there during her screen share where she showed you different places on the site, then, yeah, go back and watch that.
Okay, so that was recorded?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, Eleanor? The call is when you go to the recording section, and you'll see in the drop down it'll say NEPT recordings, and then the sidebar comes out and it's under special calls.
Special calls. Okay, good. Thank you for that, Lynn. And then the other question I had, I started getting emails from JJ Virgin. Are we supposed to be, as a result of Shine, supposed to be getting some kind of class or something from her? Is that why I started getting emails from her?
She
mentioned something.
But that was for, we had a bonus that she offered for new NEPT people to get in her program.
Okay.
And maybe she gave it to everybody. That's something for Lynn to check out. I don't know.
Well, we were in, I don't know if you remember, but we were in that session with her. You invited
me. In that session, yeah. Did she
talked about it. And then she talked about it, thinking that she probably only had the new NEPT people in there. But, so I just wanted to make sure, because I started getting emails, but there's nothing about a class, and I just wanted
As far as I know, it was just, she was just going to give it to the new people.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
I'm on her mailing list just because I'm on her mailing list, and I'm not aware of anything, any other gift or anything. You have all the handouts and so forth. But I've made a note to follow up and make sure that we're all okay on that.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. I started getting emails from her, and I'm trying to really limit my emails this year, so I didn't want to do anything to cut off a class, but I understand.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you. Easy. Thank you, Eleanor. So I just want to step in for those of you who are not in any PT, might have been like, what the heck is she talking about getting back on track? So when you ask a question, whether you type it in or you do it orally, it's a good idea to let me know what program you're in. Those of you in any PT, I kind of know who you are, so you don't have to. But, you know, if you're in like IRFPT or CMDS, because we have a whole bunch of new people that joined just over the last month or so, then let me know which program you're in. That way I can access, when you ask a question, I can let you know where to access more information if that's appropriate, and I know which program you're calling about, you know, which one you're in. And if you're in IRSPT and you're asking something about microbiome, and I have something in the CMDS program about that, you know, I could tell you it's in the CMDS program, but you won't have access to it. And those of you in any PT have access to everything that I've ever done for practitioners, all the SHINE videos and all of the CMDS and IRSPT stuff, plus, you know, as you said, as you know, 36 modules of great stuff and calls. So that's what Eleanor was referring to when she asked that question. So when you introduce yourself, say, hi, I'm so-and-so, and I'm from, or if I name you and I open up your line, just tell me where you, which program you're from. So I think this is Simone, if I'm not mistaken, in Myersville, Maryland.
You are amazing, Dr. Ravenberg. How in the world you remember that? I have no idea. But that's
I don't know. Random facts get buried in my brain, and somehow it has to do with where people are and the pseudo aliases that they log in to these calls on, because sometimes their names are different. And I know that, you know, Joey Smith is really Mary Brown or whatever. So thank you for saying that, though.
Oh, you really are amazing. And I guess it's the way your brain works, because the amount of information that you understand and impart is incredible. So you're doing the world a great service. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, sorry it's cold in Florida. I'm not sure where you are, but are you further south in Florida?
I'm in St. Pete. No, I'm in St. Pete near Tampa. I had a conference here. I had a conference in Tampa that starts Thursday night, and I thought, well, I love that area. The conference is more in town. It's not by the beach, and I really want to have the opportunity to run on the beach. So I came a few days early. I figured I could work at the little cottage, the little Airbnb, and down the street from the beach, and I can go do my runs on the beach. And so far I haven't. I just got here late last night, so I'm going to do that after this call. I'm going to bundle up and go out on the beach instead of put my bathing suit on and shorts and go out on the beach.
Well, I'm sure it'll be warmer than it is here in Maryland, because we have snow on the ground. So
Yeah. It's definitely warmer than that. I think it was in the 50s this morning. It's supposed to go up to 60. It's 56 still, so that's really chilly for here. Yeah.
It is. So, all right. So I'm still stymied about the blood sugar thing, and it's still erratic. And there's some really interesting things that you wouldn't think would work. I do want to preface this by saying still, like, my fasting blood sugar is, you know, somewhere around 100, and sometimes a little less. Like this morning, I think it was 95, and sometimes a little higher. My fasting insulin, only just did the one read, was 1. I didn't wonder, is there insulin resistance? But it's low. It's a low insulin number. And, you know, I eat no sugar, no carbs. I mean, except for vegetables. I'm heavy on the vegetables. but I do a good bit of fat. I eat a lot of nuts and seeds and some coconut oil, and I make my own coconut yogurt with the, you know, raw frozen coconut. Olive oil and CT oil in my salad, and a little bit of avocado oil if I ever do saute something, which is pretty rare.
Fruit, what about fruit? Do you eat much in the way of fruit, or any in the way of fruit?
Well, this is the interesting thing. You know, I have a garden in the summer, and I grow my own organic blueberries, and I have wild raspberries growing all over the place. And so I pick and freeze, and it's like I have a little bit of those in the evening with my coconut yogurt after dinner. And that's not really an issue. And it's not, this is the other really interesting thing. I heard Tom O'Brien say something that reminded me of when I was like fully doing the Ayurvedic thing. And that the thing from the system that I learned is that in the morning you would either do a stewed apple or pear depending on your pH. And you would put cloves in and cinnamon in it. And that would be like the first thing you ate. And I kept thinking, well, that's probably, you know, contributed to this crazy blood sugar thing. Well, I heard him talk about it. I'm like, you know what? Because it's good food for the microbiome. And so I'm like, I've got these organic apples. I'm just going to try that. I eat that, and I test my blood sugar, and it doesn't change. Well, you know, I'll eat like maybe a half of a small apple, just cook the softness with the skin on, with cloves and cinnamon, and it doesn't affect my blood sugar. The other really strange thing is when I do like my timed eating window thing of at least 12 hours from dinner to breakfast, yeah. And it, the longer I go, my blood sugar goes up. If I do bursts, my blood sugar goes up. So the best thing for
me. I'm going to stop you right there because I think I have some ideas, and I want to really explain this to others to get, you know, to really use you as a learning case, if that's okay, because that's what we're all here for, obviously, as practitioners. So it's really important, like you've been doing this for a long time, right? And so it's mainly the first morning, right, that you have the problem. It's not after eating. Is that correct?
That's correct. And usually after eating, my blood sugar goes down. Ah, what's that about?
So you're in emergency mode, honey. you're running on, your body is constantly thinking that every time you don't eat for a long period of time that you're starving. And so what it's doing is it's going after all your glycogen stores and it's converting that into sugar and it's raising your blood sugar.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I'm doing this keto challenge thing now, and I told people, I'm going to tell people, you know, when you're not a good candidate necessarily for keto or for intermittent fasting, and I don't think you're a candidate for intermittent fasting.
Yeah. So yeah, which is really interesting because there's so many good benefits to fasting, you know, like trash and all that stuff.
Yes. And if you were to do a supervised longer fast, you might do fine. But for just using it as a routine, you know, every day I go 16 to 18 hours between my last meal and my first meal. And generally speaking, by the time I eat again, my blood sugar is in the 50s because my body's, you know, it's doing what it needs to do, which is converting to burning fat, and that's to raise the sugar. But you're clearly burning glycogen or muscle if you didn't have glycogen. But if you're eating regularly, you're going to have glycogen stores, and you're burning that glycogen and turning it into sugar because your body's going, emergency. It might be muscle because in that cortisol state, it's burning it. So a couple of things I want to say. One is, hemoglobin A1C is an important measure for you because then you know what your overall average is. And if your overall average, in spite of high morning sugar, if your high morning sugar, you know, is like 90 to 100 or something, and your hemoglobin A1C is 5, it means that that's the only time you're really having that spike. The rest of the time you're keeping it normal or low. Right? So that's an important number. Do you know what it is?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you here in a moment. I will also share that, like, last spring I did I don't know if you know John Duyard. He's really he's very knowledgeable. And he does this Colorado cleanse. And I did the short version of it, using ghee in the morning and et cetera, et cetera. And then I went on to do a liver cleanse, and then while I was at it, I just did a, I guess it was in between, before the lift climb, did my stem cells, all kinds of good stuff. And at, you know, like at first, blood sugar was a little high, then it kept going down, and I forget what the lowest was. And I thought, oh, good, I'm going to reset everything, and I won't have blood sugar issues. And then, you know, I go back to gradually eating again and being high. But anyway, it's just really, that's really interesting.
Tell me about this cleanse, though. What, like, were you doing any periods of, like, pure water just for a while, or was it?
Yeah, I did a water fast.
For how long?
Well, that's not his. That's not his thing.
Yeah, I'm sorry, because you're bugging out and I'm missing every other word. That's why I may be asking you questions of something that I didn't, that you already said.
Yeah, no, his cleanse, the short version that I did is ghee in the morning, and you gradually increase that, but you're eating food.
Okay.
But then I went on to, because I was going to do this liver gallbladder flush, I decided to do a water fast. As I was approaching that. And so I think I went 3 days. But anyway, yeah, it didn't.
And so it got better. Your blood sugar got better as the days went on. Is that right?
Yeah.
You were getting fat adapted. Your body was then going, oh, I'm going to burn fat. It wasn't burning glycogen at that point. And
right.
Yeah. So it would be yeah, and then you expect it to go back, but 3 days isn't enough to really retrain your body well enough that it doesn't go back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, right. Yeah, I think in general, I would avoid the intermittent fast. You know, I would just eat your last meal, still do your 3 hours before dinner, and then you're one of the people that needs to eat first thing in the morning.
Yeah, and have and I love drinking all my liquids. First, you know, the lemon water with turmeric, and then my mushroom teas and my cistus tea, blah, blah, blah. Okay, but, yeah, I try to get to eating as soon as I can. Okay, hemoglobin
A1C. Yeah, so try to get that and stick some protein powder in the water if that's, you know, you don't have to eat, but you can put some protein powder in water and have that first thing just to help you get, and just see. Like, do that for 3 or 4 days and see.
See what happens, yeah. So my hemoglobin A1C was 5.3.
Okay, so it's a little, I mean, ideally I'd like to see it around 5. So, but it's not high, which would be suggested. So it's very consistent with the story you told me. And have you tested insulin postprandial? You said you tested it fasting.
No, just the fasting insulin, and it was
okay. Because what I want to rule out here, and this is what everybody needs to know, when somebody says their fasting insulin is 1, that could be okay, but you definitely have to follow that up. So if you have somebody with a 1 as a fasting insulin, I would always follow it up with postprandial insulin. What I mean by that is, you know, eat your highest carbohydrate meal, you know, the highest carbohydrate meal you're willing to eat. You know, you don't want to go out and eat Twinkies and M&Ms. That's not what you normally do, right? But like your berries, have a meal with berries and no fat. I wouldn't do it with fat. I want to see how the berries do with you. So just have a meal with berries and greens and then go into the lab 45 minutes to an hour later and have your insulin tested. If your insulin doesn't go up, if it stays at 1 or goes up to 2 or 3, but not very much further than that, that tells me you're not looking as much as an insulin resistance problem as a pancreatic insufficiency problem. So we really need to differentiate that, right? Now,
right.
It could be that there's some antibodies. You may, you know, we'll see what happens once you do that. If that comes out that, no, it doesn't budge, then the problem is related to pancreatic insufficiency. If it goes up to like 12, yay, great. If it goes up to, you know, 60, then you have a problem of over secreting insulin, but which I doubt from what you've told me, but it's possible. So we always want to find out when we give people this protocol to do. You're the classic good example. This is great for everybody to hear of the person who doesn't respond as well as we expect them to respond. And so then you have to dig deeper. That's why the class is put together, and that's why these calls are here, to help you to be able to dig. So whenever someone is having an issue where they can't get their first morning blood sugar down, it could be what we just discussed, where your body's going into emergency mode and thinking you're starving and having to burn glycogen to bring it up. It could be that there's a parasitic infection and the parasites are laying their eggs overnight and there's some sort of stress. It could be like a PTSD type thing where you've had a trauma that's happened during the middle of the night, a robbery, a break-in, molestation, sexual misconduct by a family member, incest. It could be any of those things. Dad coming home drunk and beating mom up in the middle of the night and you covering under the covers when you were little. I mean, so many different things. So that's where we want to get to the heart of, why is this sugar high in the morning? Is it because the cortisol is jumping up? For some reason, usually it's cortisol jumping up and really figuring out what the reason is. So for you, but given that you tested your fasting insulin and it was one, it was like, that might be good, but it might not be. We also need to rule out pancreatic insufficiency.
Right, right. Yeah, and I was mistaken. It was 1.6 for the insulin level, but close enough, I guess.
Yeah, well, 1.6, you know, it's getting there. But if it doesn't go up, or it only goes up to 3, and then, you know, then it may not be that your body's producing enough insulin, or you're overproducing insulin in response to the meal, and that's causing the resistance, which then could also cause rapid clearing because the insulin gets so high that it has to rapidly go low, and then that would maybe make you experience those lows after meals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, it's we are so complicated, aren't we?
We are, right? That's why people need us, to help to support them. If it was easy, everybody would just pick up a book, read it, and do it, and everybody would be happy.
Right, right.
Okay, so I'm going to move on. Dr. Ali has her hand up, and there's a few more questions in there. But do you have any last questions to close this up?
Well, no, I'll let you go on because, I mean, I have more questions. But I understand.
All right, so raise your hand again, and I'll come back to you. How's that?
All right. Thank you.
All right. Yeah, just raise it again, and I'll come back to you when I make full circle. Thank you.
Thank you again so much.
Sure. All right, Allie. Dr. Allie. Hi.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can.
Oh, right. It looks like I'm muted, and I'm obviously not. Okay. Hi, everybody. Hi, Rita Marie. I would just like your take on a couple of tests that I had that I haven't had the chance to look into the results yet. Lynn posted some really great stuff in the practitioner group. One is a Great Plains Laboratory mycotox profile, which shows really high levels of ochratoxin A and mycophenolic acid, which suggests Penicillium and Aspergillus. I've sent it to you by Skype and to Lynn's. Lynn's got it on an email. But, of course, we're not screen sharing here, so it's a bit different.
Yeah, these are harder calls to do labs on. The ones, the antibiotic ones are ones that we usually do labs on. So tell me, because you know I didn't get anything. Oh, there, Allie, there you are. Let me see if I can download it. Okay. That's one, and there was two. Oh, there's just one. Let me see. Okay, download. Whoops, keeps changing. Open. I'll download that one while I open that one. Okay, I'm opening one of them. You sent two. Okay, so this is a myco. Which one's this? Oh, this is the heavy metals. Oh, my God,
okay.
Your lead is off the charts.
Yeah.
Your lead is off the charts. What are you exposed to, or what had you been in the past exposed to?
I don't know.
This is provocative. Okay, never mind. I got my answer. I looked down below and it says it was done by the it was provocative. But I'm asking her a question about whether the test was done, it's a urine test, whether it was done provoked or unprovoked. So unprovoked is you just get somebody's urine and test it, and then provoked is you take a dose of DMSA to help pull those metals that have been sequestered away in body tissue out into the blood and then into the urine. And so all of our others, except cesium, is a tiny bit high, which could be, you know, exposure to, like, contrast tests and things like that. But lead is off the charts. So it means that, you know, if you had a comparison between an unprovoked and a provoked, and lead was low and then high, that's saying that there's a lot of lead sequestered away. Usually it's in bones and brain, but bones are big. And then if it was it was high both times, it means that lead is free floating around, and it's more likely to be a more recent exposure. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so then the other one just got ready. Let me open the other one up. All right, so the other test that she did was from the Great Plains Lab, and it's their mycotox profile, and they're looking at toxins produced by various unsundry microbes. So aspergillus, so aflatoxin is slightly high, but arachitoxin is super, super high. I know aflatoxin is in peanuts and things like that. I am not sure about arachitoxin. I'll have to look that one up. And then there's some produced by penicillium, and then that's the only one, mycophenolic acid by penicillium. So it looks like it's possible that you've got some, you know, aspergillus and penicillium exposures, right? So those are two different bugs in the body that produce these toxins. You can also get some of this in food. So I'm looking at the rest of them. Those are the only ones. All right. So did you have a specific question about this? Like, where's the exposure? Or, yeah. So
it was really just interesting. I think my plan to move to Devon might be a timely thing, really. So I've always lived in old houses. Used to tell whether there's lead paint or lead piping around, and there's definitely been mold and damp and leaks in all of the houses I've lived in, for sure. At the moment, I've got three areas in the house where I live in a 16th century ex-brewery. And there are three places where the ceiling has got evidence of damp in. And if you remember, Rita, when you visited last April, when you came to Kingston to give a talk, I showed you my office, and you spotted that it smelt damp and that there was damp in the corner. So, you know, I think this isn't that surprising. I'm just trying to, I was really trying to work out what's wrong with my daughter, but also for my brain fog as well. Yeah. So.
Oh my gosh, yes. So did she have this test too? But I mean, if this is there and it's in your environment, the whole family is being exposed. And mold exposure, as you know, can result in, you know, symptoms that resemble anything, right? So headaches are possible, immunosuppression, joint pains, low energy, and a lot of the stuff I know that your daughter's been experiencing. And she lived in that house her whole life?
Yes, she has.
Yeah, so she's had a lifetime of exposure. You had, you know, whenever you moved in from now.
Yeah, I've been living there 26 years.
Yeah, but you at least had time to have other, like, build up some other things, so it may be even worse for her. So, you know, mold remediation is important. Looking into how do you get rid of the mold, but it could not be, maybe it's not possible, because I remember your office had stacks and stacks of papers and things like that and books, and that stuff permeates. And some people, in order to do full mold remediation, they move to a new place. They have to get rid of a lot of their stuff, anything that is a usable fiber. So I think it would be, if you are planning to move, then absolutely that's the time to do it. For now, you need to support your immune systems big time. Big time. Okay, so, you know, of course, you know, vitamin C, maybe glutathione, all of the immune antioxidant type nutrients, a super clean diet so that you don't add to the exposure. So I think of our immune system uses a bucket, and when that bucket gets full and starts overflowing, that's when we get symptoms. And if your bucket is already full with these mycotoxins and you add on to it food toxins, food allergens, it's just going to add to the load. So to decrease your symptoms, you may want to be really super careful about your diet and eating impeccably and organic only as much as possible, I guess, in England in the winter. And then, you know, avoiding the dairy and the gluten and all those sorts of things. I think it's super important that the foundations become even more important. And air filter, big time, right? Could air filter, does she have an air filter in her bedroom?
No, I've never used an air filter.
You got to get air filters in there.
Okay.
Looking to what's available there, like what's that one, Air Doctor? It's a good one. Mm-hmm. I don't know if what's available overseas, because I only know what's available here, but I think Air Doctor or something like that with the HEPA filters.
Right.
And you need to be running them. So at least one on each story, but I would say in all the rooms that you inhabit. And, you know, read the instructions on these things and see how big a square foot area it'll cover for you.
Yeah. Okay, brilliant. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, you're so welcome.
Wonderful. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, so let me look at the Q&A. All right, Lynn, you have your line open. If there's anything you want to add or say, go for it. And I'm looking at Q&A.
Oops. No, there is one thing, though, that Leah had, she tried to submit a really long question, but it didn't go through. So she has emailed it to you at coaching@Dr. Rita Marie.
Is it one question or is it a lot of background related to the question?
It's a lot of background related.
Here's what I'm going to give everyone. Okay, so here's what I would recommend when we have questions. Type your question in first, and then you can say, here's the background. Because for me, reading a long, long background, I'd rather ask questions. Is Leah on the call?
She is. I just don't know. I don't see her on.
Okay, because it would be easier for me. I'll look there. The other thing is just divide it up. On the Q&A piece, divide the different segments. Personally, I'm just going to share something, be vulnerable. When I see writing that has more than 3 to 5 sentences without a white space in between, it just overwhelms my nervous system. And I can't read it. And I tell people that with their blog posts, with their emails, divide it up. And that's why you see me only do like short paragraphs, because maybe it's my vision. I've always had, you know, vision problems, but all of the words start to go together and I just want to walk away. So short, you know, one question per Q&A thing. So you go in there and you say, and here's the background, and here's the background, and here's the background. So I would prefer if she could go back and do it that way, because going to my email, opening my email, which is closed right now, getting it to open up, waiting for it to, you know, all that stuff is going to delay on the call. So that's what I would prefer. Let's put it in the right place, put it in the Q&A part, and put the question, and then right after that, here's some background. Or if you're on the call, I'd much rather get on the phone with you and be able to ask what I need from the background rather than having to read it background. Because a lot of times, and I want you guys to learn to do this with your clients too, is because a lot of times they think it's important that Aunt Mary that visited them when they were 7 years old, you know, brought this whatever, and we get lost, and they get lost in the story, and I want to teach you how to help them to not get lost in the story, and the best way to do it is to train you to do it yourself. Does that make sense? It's not what I mean or anything. I just want to get the most out of this call for everybody that's on it.
Right. And
make
she's
sense?
Trying to work out how to get on. This is her first time, and so what I wanted to say is, so when you came to the call and there's that part in the middle that gives you the three choices of how to listen, either broadcast, web call, or phone, and she's also in the U.S.
just got robotic, and I didn't hear your last sentence. So, you're robotic, and I didn't hear.
Oh, sorry.
Yes, I see Leah. Thank you, and welcome to CMDS. I'm so glad you're here. And you're doing it already. So I see you breaking it up here in the chat into one sentence. If you don't know how to get into the Q&A, no worries, Lynn, if you can just copy her stuff into separate pieces. But let me go back. Just give me the question again. So if you could retype the question at the end or put it in the Q&A, then I will be able to see it because I don't see it in the Q&A.
Okay. Okay, so I will go and do that.
Okay. And Carla has a question typed in. That's the only other one in the Q&A, so I'll just address it. Is there a good liquid probiotic that I would recommend? There's something called Inner Echo, which is like a coconut kefir type of a liquid probiotic. And other than that, I don't know of any. And I don't know if that's available. She's not in the UK. So, yeah. So if you can just at least put in her question,
I'm going to do it in chunks so that you can.
Yeah, put the question first.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm looking for.
Okay, Leah, go ahead and retype in the chat your question so that we don't have to look back. And then I'll have that question. Meanwhile, Lynn will try to copy and paste all the little pieces of it from here.
So basically, and I'll just give this and then I'll keep putting it in. Basically, she's got a very painful neck, MRI to check for problems. The C2 kept going out of alignment. Her MRI is clear, but scrunching sounds like sand's been evident for 4 years, presumably low calcium levels, which have been confirmed. Anyway, I'm looking here for the actual question.
Okay. So in general, I'm just going to go back to this, and I don't like to impose rules, but I want your questions, if they're personal questions for you personally, I prefer to answer those on a call that's for others. I mean, if they're not related specifically to the program you're in. So if it's digestive related, if it's blood sugar related, when we're talking structural problems, I'm happy to answer them, but I think that those should be relegated to a call that's meant for, you know, a vital call, an office hours call. But because going into that, that's like going off track from what most people are here and learning, and the kinds of things that I'm going to talk about are not things that are certainly things that people in NEPT could be benefiting from or study in the program, but it's not stuff that we necessarily study. So, and I'm happy to give you an answer if there's nobody else with questions that are more related. But again, it's, you know, there's usually, those are the better questions to come on the line. I understand if you're in the UK, but Allie did, if you just hit the web call. So, I just want to make this as simple for everybody as possible.
Sure. I'm just going to add my piece in here, too, especially when you talk about getting lost in the details in the story. And so this can be a really good learning tool for everybody because we take a history and we see all these things and we forget what was the original reason they came in here, what was the question. And so as we look at the story, you know, what is the outcome we want for this person? Do we want them to have less belly fat? Do we want them to have more energy? Do we want them to have clarity? So as I'm looking through this for what it is she's looking for, it looks to be fatigue related. And
good. That helps.
So she says something because she talks about in beginning of December, started to go back to bed again as exhausted and once again sleeping 12 hours minimum. So something
is
up.
This is a client. Yes. When you asked me the question a few minutes ago, it sounded like it was Leah was experiencing this.
Thank you for clarifying that. I because I was trying to read through this quickly myself. And so it is a client. And
I just found the email, and I'm just going to cut everything because I want to make sure this is beneficial. I'm going to cut through to this. And I want, again, when you're asking questions, don't give me the history first. Give me the question first and then the history. So I'm looking at our background. Ended up suspecting long thing. Okay, so it's very hard to know what the question is. So I'm going to ask you, I'm going to make this a really good learning experience thing. What is the question you would want me to answer for this person? How to help her with the fatigue.
Yeah. She's in the chat as well, so I'm trying to read through that.
So this is all good information. It's just I really want you guys to just be able to hone in and explain in that way, because especially like if you're making a referral to, like you're making a referral to an MD, for example, you're going to need to, the first thing you give people is, you know, you give them the history, but you give them the impression or the diagnosis or something, and then you go into the background. She needs the whole program first. Yes. Okay, so I'm going to go through. I'm going to make this a learning opportunity for everybody. I'm going to read this history, and I'm going to read it out loud so I don't get lost in it. And you did a great job of separating it in paragraphs, by the way. Thank you. So I'm new to the group. Your thoughts are appreciated. So this woman, it sounds like she has fatigue. She's has extremely exemplary diet, and I'm gonna challenge everybody on that. When somebody says I have a great diet, you want to make sure it's the great diet for them, right? Good hydration, exercise, aware of emotional stresses. So she sounds like she's really mindful of all this. Meditates, is an NLP practitioner, qualified in nutrition. So it sounds like she's one of those super challenging cases where they're doing everything and it's really hard to figure out. And she's 52. Okay. 2 years ago, and one thing about people in that age range is to let us know, are they menopausal, perimenopausal, postmenopausal. In November 2016, she had food poisoning. Stool tests showed nothing, but that doesn't mean anything. In January 2017, her health declined. Went to the GP terribly fatigued, sleeping 14 hours a day. Nothing showed on full blood count. Full blood count is a small little amount of the total lab. And this is over in UK. So knowing from what I know from knowing Allie for a while, it probably was not a very thorough blood report. May 2016 was given antidepressants. Of course, we don't know what's wrong. Here's your antidepressants. Did not take them, but blood didn't show much of anything. Again, I would love to know what they mean by full blood count. Is that, like here we say a blood count, we usually mean like a CBC. It gives you the numbers of the white and the red blood cells and a few other markers. Diet looked at again, work-life balance and stress addressed, T3, T4, adrenals and cortisol checked, cortisol high 718. Again, when you're reporting numbers, what test was that? So if the cortisol was checked by the GP, it was probably a blood first thing in the morning cortisol, and a high first thing in the morning cortisol means something. A normal first thing in the morning cortisol on blood doesn't mean anything. So this is high, so she's definitely got some issues with cortisol dysregulation, adrenal dysregulation. November 18 ran Genova Krebs cycle amino acid test, showed gut dysbiosis, elevated PAA, possibly due to hypochlorhydria, pepsin inactivity, or impaired digestive peptidase, elevated benzoic acid, CAA normal, low levels of succinic acid, figlu. Okay, so these are really, like, I'm just going to say, going through somebody's complete history and a bunch of tests without me seeing the tests visually and seeing what I look for is difficult, but this is good because if you have this test in CMDS, you know, this is something you can upload and we can look at. Painful neck. MRI kept to C2, kept going out of line. Calcium levels ended up in A&E. A&E is at ER for us. I'm not sure, Allie if, or Leah, if you want to pop in and say what A&E might be. It sounds like that might be an ER, emergency room. Heart attack in 2008.
Yes, Allie said A&E is ER. She also said FBC is the same as a CBC.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's a very limited test. Great, thank you. Celiac diagnosis in 2018 after endoscopy, and we know that celiac can create symptoms anywhere in any kind of gluten intolerance. Focal intestinal metaplasia and chronic reactive gastritis confirmed. Okay, so she's been completely off since October 18. Massive improvements in mood, lost 6 kilos, doesn't want to lose any more. Sleep improved, however, beginning December, tried to go back again as exhausted. Terrible burning pains. Okay, so here's where I'm going to step in and say, with celiac, right, you definitely have to get them off of gluten, that's your step, but you also have to go back and fix things. So digestion on fire, right? So it sounds like that inflammation is actually starting to become symptomatic there. Stomach distended after chocolate and a hidden pickle in food vinegar. Now feels pulsing under the rib cage. So H. pylori rules out, depends on how you did the H. pylori test. Some of the H. pylori tests are not that accurate. I recommend the BioHealth one because if they say H. pylori is negative, it usually is the case. So that's something to look at. But there's definitely this inflammation here. Something is stopping this lady climbing out of fatigue. Folate and visa. Okay, so she's had celiac, undiagnosed celiac, and has been on grains for her whole life. And she's only been off for 3 months. It often takes 6 months or more to see a full effect. So now it's time for you to help her go in there and do the healing. She needs to heal her gut. She needs to do a gut repair. I start usually with something simple when they have burning, which is gastritis, with slippery elm and DGL. All of that's in the upper GI module of the program. So I can't go through all the protocols and all that here. But you just joined, I think, just a couple weeks ago, actually. So that upper GI module and then the intestinal repair module is important for you to be looking at. Back in, I can't remember when you said she did that, do the CRIPS. Oh, yeah, so the amino acid. Yeah, a stool test could be very helpful because you're going to help identify it. But she's got, I would go through the program pieces and look at upper GI repair, just do some of the palliative stuff, like starting with slippery elm and DGL, and then looking deeper, and then looking at the gut repair piece, because it's going to take her a while to get this repaired after all this time. Blood levels of B12, by the way, are useless. So you really do need to look at other things. You need to look at methylmalonic acid, MMA, and the MCV, mean corpuscular volume. And if the mean corpuscular volume on that test is above the equivalent of the U.S. numbers of 90, then I'd be looking at B12 as being an issue and MMA as the gold standard.
So Giardia, she does say?
Sure. And you can get that from the gut, the stool test. I like either Doctor's Data or Genova. I think Genova is one that they have over there. Yes, Lynn.
She does say she's just completing the upper GI module. And it's interesting as you're talking, it's like you and Allie are just in sync. She's typing it and you're saying it at the same time. Allison also mentioned the Dutch test. Is something to consider. And then, Leah, I'm not sure exactly, you say working with an herbalist on that. So if you could expand on that, what you mean with that, that would be great. And Allison said that the Dutch test can also give you the MMA.
It gives you the MMA, yeah. Yeah. You know, that's, you really want to be looking at what these, you know, what are adrenals doing? And that's the Dutch approach, right? So we're looking at all these different aspects of it. If Giardia is a problem, sure, but I would be careful if she's got severe gastritis in giving proteolytic enzymes because it could aggravate. So you want to soothe first.
She's She's working with the, and she's working with the herbalist on the slippery elm, the marshmallow, and licorice.
Oh, great. Okay.
Yeah. And just for my own, because if I had somebody who came in with this, one of the other things I would make sure is that their organs of elimination were working well.
Absolutely.
So that they're, so they're having regular bowel movements. What do they look like? That type of thing. And then also, is she sweating? Especially if you have the adrenal issues, if she's not sweating, that's also something to consider.
Absolutely. So in MCT for, and Allison is, 17, 20 years, something like that, as a general practitioner in England, as well as being one of our first students in our NAPT program or earlier years. So she's got a lot of background here in doing a functional history, and that's the piece that that really is important when you're looking at fatigue. There's gut relationships here, but, as a result, maybe the gut came first because it seemed like that's when she started after the bout of food poisoning. It may have disrupted something, gotten some kind of, bug that's not been eliminated. Her microbiome's out of balance, and it may be just highlighting some other issues that might have been there before, low stomach acid, et cetera. And so it's a complex case. Congratulations on taking on a complex case like this, because there's a lot to it. And there's a lot of steps to it. So it's really important that you're going through and doing a thorough history to rule out, all the different other organ involvement. So I think you've done a really good job. You did a great job of presenting it, lots and lots of detail. Appreciate that. And I would say it looked like she did a stool test. I wasn't sure the date on when she's done that, but I think a stool test would be a really good thing. Because that would give you an idea of exactly what's in there at present state. But if it's more recent, then you can use and address what was there. It could still be H. pylori, so you want to be super careful. If it is H. pylori, not to be giving people stomach acid until you've ruled it out. And, like I said, depending on how you did it. If it was the BioHealth test, I trust it. I've seen false negatives on the Genova test and the doctor's data test. So, and definitely on the ones that the GPs will run. So I think, with that, this is much, usually when I do full cases, like in NEPT, when we have our case study calls, I'll have the person on the call so that we can go back and forth and I can ask questions and clarifying questions. It just makes it more real and more of a learning opportunity. But definitely looking at these things. It could definitely be pancreas. Again, the pancreatic elastase is one of the things that shows on that stool test that you can be able to look at and see what that was. And if the pancreas is not producing, and then if the pancreas is under functioning, then you also want to think, well, why is the pancreas under functioning? Is it spending a lot of its time and energy on blood sugar regulation, and how's her blood sugar? Right. So these are all the pieces that work really well together. So is that, UK just may not have, Okay, so does that help, Leah? If you still have any questions, just post the specific questions in the chat, and we'll see what we can do. Okay?
Something I wanted to, and this is for everybody, when you have access to either the Digestive Mastery Program, the Insulin Resistance Program, as well as the full NEPT program, you also have access to the Unstoppable Health site. And on there is a lab testing page. So if you're curious or wondering about some of these labs we're talking about, you can go to the Unstoppable Health Community site. So it's unstoppablehealthcommunity.com. There is also a link right on your student material site that will take you there. And so look for the tile that says lab testing, and you can review all the labs that you have access to order through.
So, if you're not a licensed practitioner in your state or whatever, we give you access to order, but we're only willing to do it for your clients if it's just, while you're a student and you're doing, low volume. But once you start to have volume, we don't have the staff to handle that, and nor do we want to develop that part of the business because it's very time consuming and there's no financial reward in that piece. You know, there's no way that we can even cover our expenses with that. So if you're in the program and you're running it on a few patients or family members or yourself, no worries. But if you're running people through and you're doing three or four a week, we can't handle that. And you need to be in NEPT where we can help. We can get you an account with that site directly. Okay?
Great.
Yeah, great job, Leah.
And
it sounds like you're really on it.
Yeah, and I wanted to thank her, too, for the example, I guess, so that the rest of us know that this is how we present it. You present it where you have your question. It's really important that you understand what is it you're looking for. And then you kind of move backwards looking for that why.
Exactly.
So then you have your supporting pieces as to why you're doing it. So
and
hopefully
it's chronological, right? You do it in a chronological order, like a timeline, because that way we can follow. And I want to say about that, too, is that when you write a case, like say you're going to refer to an MD or somebody, another professional, the usual start is, you know, 52-year-old female presents with, and that's what you put, that's where we're like debilitating fatigue and, you know, whatever, insomnia for the last 6 years, right? And that way it's like this brief overview. So as a clinician is reading the background, we're focused on what the presentation is and what we're looking for in that case. So that's really helpful too. So the age of the person, the sex of the person, you know, you can say 52-year-old, overweight, normal weight, underweight, female presents with, you know, debilitating pain in her right metatarsal or right thumb for the last 6 years. And then you can go on and give the background. Okay? Awesome. Thank you. And thank you, Lynn, for being in the middle and interpreting. And thank you, Allie, for contributing your wisdom as well. So I'm going to go back to Q&A and see if you've put anything else in there. And then I see that Simone has her hand up again. And we have about 15 minutes left. So there's time to answer a few more questions. Okay, I'm refreshing. And nothing's happening when I refresh. There it comes. I see a couple more. So Dora, Carla, and it looks like one more after that. Angela. Hi, Angela. My daughter has chronic fatigue and depression and anxiety. We did an assessment. She had mono 5 years ago, no energy, always sick, has sores in her mouth frequently and UTIs. She eats well. Vegetarian and organic diet, suffers from migraines, low progesterone. Any suggestions? Well, first of all, so I would say, first of all, eat well, right? Eat well doesn't mean a lot. Vegetarian and organic can mean that she's eating organic corn chips and organic soy cheese all day long, right? So diet-wise, we really need to look at the balance in the diet. Is she gluten-free? Is she dairy-free? Because you said vegetarian, not vegan. Those can very much contribute to it. And she could be gluten intolerant. So those are things that you can start looking at. All of those things can play in, right? And you don't say how old she is. You don't say whether she's menstruating. So there's a lot more missing there.
She's 24.
Okay, so she's not a kid at home. Yeah, so you want details of the diet. Always want details of what these people are eating before you can jump in and say, oh, yeah, she should take natural progesterone or put her on B6 because that can help, right? We need a full repertoire. So any suggestions, meaning any suggestions to help figure out what the depression and the anxiety are? You know, so we want to know how long has it been going on. You want to look at when did it start? So I would suggest that you go back through and see when did this fatigue start and what was happening leading up to that in the last anywhere from 2 years up to right before. Was there travel? Was there a mold exposure? Does she eat gluten is the first thing I ask, right? she's always sick, her immunity is low, she has sores on her mouth, frequent UTIs. So you really want to look at all of those factors that play in too. So that's what I would do, is really look at that carefully. And since she's no longer under your control, right, she's 24, she's not somebody that you're feeding and making meals for, or like if she was 14, then it's really questioning her about those things and helping her to see where she can improve those things. Okay?
So she is trying to get on.
Anybody else has anything?
She is trying to get on, but she also says she has very irregular periods and chronic pain with that. She takes B12, been going on about 9 years, and she has done gluten and dairy free.
Has done or is doing.
Yeah, that was what I was going to say.
A lot of people say, I tried gluten and dairy free, and it didn't work, so I started back again in 3 weeks, right? So, you know, it's not just gluten and dairy free. It's how long were you gluten and dairy free? Were there accidental exposures? Were you religious about it? Because when those things are triggered, you can have a small exposure in a corn chip that you ate, you know, or something that got cross-contaminated, or, you know, you think a little bit is okay. So those are all really important questions to be asking. And what program are you in, Angela?
She's in CMDS.
Oh, CMDS. So, you know, when you say gluten and dairy free, so I'll ask you questions and you can type in the answers. Gluten and dairy free for how long, and was it 100%? Food allergies is very possible. So what about other allergens, right? So there may be, you know, if you put her on the, if you look in CMDS at the beginning, we say start people on a basic elimination diet, gluten, dairy, corn, soy, eggs, and peanuts, and anything they already know that they have problems with. And so 9 years, was she on antibiotics? What's her antibiotic history? She had antibiotics right before that. Did it start right around the time her periods started, or had she been having her periods for a while? What other kind of exposures, right? Exposures to molds or travel, where she could have picked up a parasite or other things like that. Yeah, so, and a lot of her childhood history will play into that too. So you're looking for, right now, if she's looking for a solution and she's willing, she needs to go on an elimination diet. She needs to start introducing some good fermented foods, small amounts at a time. And looking at her mineral vitamin status, you have to look at, is she drinking out of plastic, low progesterone? Does she have high estrogen? Is there an estrogen dominance? Is she exposed to xenoestrogens, mycotoxins, et cetera? She has done gluten and dairy free. She says, yes, many times, 100%. What does many times mean, and how long did she go for? That kind of thing. She has been exposed to mold. How to test for parasites. So as far as, we're not going to have, okay, so I'm just going to clarify. On these calls, we're not going to give you solutions, diagnoses, or anything like that. I'm going to give you the next steps. So the next steps that I would do with your daughter is to get her back on an elimination diet, because if she has been and she's back on, she's got to stay off of it until we can get to the bottom of it, because these things that you do are cumulative. It's not, try this one, it didn't work. Let's try that one. Oh, I tried probiotics and it didn't work, so I, you know, don't take them anymore. It's like, we've got to restore this girl's microbiome. We've got to heal her gut if there's any exposures there. And we've got to help her get her blood sugar under control. So what kind of vegetarian has she been eating? High grain, high sugar, et cetera. Got to get her off of the sugar. The gluten, dairy, corn, soy, eggs, peanuts, and sugar. That can go a long way. If being off of that, yeah. So anyway, so those are the things. That's where I would go. Yes, you may want to test her, have a stool test if you want to, but I would start with the basics and make sure that she's doing all those basics, right? Is she sleeping? How's her stress? If she has mold exposure, does she live at home with you? Does she live out on her own? That sort of stuff. So you got a lot to go on to counsel her. And I would, you're in the program, you just started CMDS, start with the beginnings. And if you want to heal, help her heal her gut, just start with the program and work your way through. It starts with the upper GI. It starts with the mind and the stress. It starts with the upper GI, and then it goes into the pancreas and the middle GI, and then it goes into the elimination, and all of those things will play in. So give it time. and go on the full elimination diet. 12 weeks for gluten-free may not be enough. It may not be for that either. So have her go on it and know that she's going to be on it for a while until we get her get to the bottom of it and work her through the program. I would work her through the program. Okay?
And I know she started that with the assessments and so forth.
Great.
And one thing I wanted to say, and you'll probably see this in the program, I always remember that comment by Dr. O'Brien, where it takes at least 6 months for the antibodies to,
yep,
to go back down. So even if you have just a bit, your body starts building up antibodies, and it takes at least 6 months for that to calm down from your body. And the other thing is, people always often will say, well, I'm going back to do something. And you really, that's almost impossible, because, unless you're a time traveler, because you have learned things, your body has come forward, and so you may return and start a program from those steps, but your body cannot go backwards. And so you're building on what you have now, using those steps to go forward.
Yeah.
So
excellent. Yeah, and that language is really, really important. So yes, so you got things to go through, and just go through the program, right? Go through it with her. A lot of times people have tried this or that. They say, oh, I've done what you teach to do, but they've done this piece or that piece, and they have done them at different points in time. And it's really a matter of building balance in the body and finding out what's out of balance. And yeah, I think if you take her through the program, you're going to get a lot of good results, and if she's willing to be compliant, right? Okay. All right. I think that's it. I've got a couple more minutes. I'll go back and see if there's any others. And Lynn, was there anything else in the Q&A that I should go back to?
No, just, she's started doing the elimination diet. And I also want to point out for those, whether in CMJS, IRSPT, or what, there's an amazing amount of charts and tracking sheets and things that you can give to your clients, family members, whoever, that will help them. Because just like Dr. Rita Marie is being a great example of empowering us, our job then becomes to empower our clients to have this for themselves. We're not doing the program for them. We're helping them as they go to whatever program we put together. So as you give them the checklists and tracking sheets, that helps them to be accountable and responsible for their own behavior. So,
absolutely.
And so for this
one chart that in that program. Oh, sorry, there was a gap and I jumped in. Sorry about that.
That's okay. Go ahead.
Go for it. I was going to say that there's this one chart that you brought up when you do all these assessments, and then we give you this beautiful summary chart where you can map out the findings, and it will give you the various, I hate to use the word protocols, but the approaches for you to take that are going to be higher priority and the ones that are going to be contraindicated. And I don't remember exactly which piece it's in, but it's after you've learned enough that we introduce that form. And it's an amazing form.
That form is actually the program action guide, and you actually don't see it until the end of the program. I am working with Jazzy to take that section out and put it in right after the digestive function, because that will help you guide where you're going to focus.
I think it's already been pulled out, and it was put together into the program action guide, so we can look at that and see where it might be. But I'm pretty sure it's out somewhere. I just don't, it's done in a logical sequence, and then it's put together in the program action guide as a summary. But yeah, the program action guide is usually available right at the beginning, and it's in the list of it's in the list somewhere. That resource list, in Grand. Okay.
All right.
Awesome. All right. I've got about 6 minutes, so I'm going to see if Simone has other questions. She has her hand up, and then we'll be done. All right. I'm trying to open you and it's not happening. I don't want to hit it again because then it, oh, there you are, you're open. Hey.
Hi. Thank you. Okay.
You're welcome.
Just to recap and then maybe look at other options here. But to the eat berries and greens, 45 minutes later, go to a lab, get the insulin checked, postprandial. Just one test, right? Of the postprandial.
Yeah, I mean you could if you want to do it. You've already done the fasting. You could redo the fasting and then go out in your car and eat your berries and greens and come back in and do it again. Then it's on the same day. That's the most accurate way to do it.
Okay.
Or you know the other way is to just do it. You know, just do the postprandial. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep, that's
all
it.
Right. And then you said if it is still low, we might think pancreatic insufficiency is one possibility. I'll come back to that in a moment. If it's say maybe 12, that's good.
Yeah, that would be a good normal response. Yeah.
Okay. And then if it's
super high, then you're overproducing insulin.
Okay. If it's above 16, then it would indicate insulin resistance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, overproduction
right?
of insulin. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. All right. And so if it were low pancreatic insufficiency, are there other tests that would indicate that's an issue or the issue, whatever.
Yeah. So, but they're expensive, so we don't want to run them unless I see an indication that it's needed. So there's antibody tests because you want to find out why, right? Why is the pancreas overused and underfunctioning right now? And it could be an antibody production. So then you'd want to test for anti-islet cell antibodies and anti-insulin antibodies.
Anti-islet
cell. So I wouldn't just go ahead and do those without first verifying that it's needed.
Okay. All right. And
okay.
I know you mentioned the other mental, emotional stuff. And, you know, like I continue to look at that. I mean, I'm working on myself every day.
I know you are.
But,
and have you done adrenal testing recently? I don't remember if you've done it in the past. I think you have, but
in the way back, yeah. And the adrenals were on the low side. I'd like to do the Dutch test. I haven't done that one. I did the BioHealth 401H.
I think the Dutch could be really helpful because it gives you a lot of really good insights. Plus, it has about 6 or 8 organic acids on it that help, you know, you get to see B12 and B6 and glutathione status and oxidation status. So.
Right.
Okay?
And the other tests that I've been toying with are the organic acid tests to, like, maybe get a read on parasites. Candida, or the, I guess that'd be more candida, and mitochondrial function, or a PCR test, which could also give some information about parasites.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
I think either or both. I always struggle with which one to do first because the tests, when you do a stool test, it's much more cumbersome and you know, all that kind of stuff. But it also gives you a lot of information about what's in there versus if you do organic acid, it gives you an indication that there's some candida overgrowth or bacterial overgrowth, but it also gives you a whole lot more. The Dutch test gives you a real good idea of the adrenal status and the sex hormone status. And then it also gives you about 8 different organic acids. So it gives you a little bit about the neurotransmitters and those vitamin status ones and melatonin. So it gives you all that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I did check melatonin in some blood work, but is that a good way to check melatonin, or is it better to do it?
I'm not sure what the very best way. I don't have strong opinions one way or the other about where the best compartment is to check melatonin.
Okay. Well, mine was high, and I used a liposomal melatonin before bed. So, anyway, thank you so much.
Oh, you're so welcome. Okay. Thank you for being here. All right. Take care.
Enjoy your run on the beach.
And thank you, everybody else. Let's say that again. Go bet my run on the beach, yes. Yes, I have a short break to do that in, so I'm going to go do that.
Okay.
So thank you, everybody, for being here. I hope this was really helpful and useful. And I want you to know that I'm giving you information about how to present things so that you get the best possible results from me, but also for, like, working in the medical community and talking to other practitioners and talking to people about cases. You want to be able to get to the point, and also when you're doing a history with people, my gosh, you want them to get to the point. Otherwise, they just keep spinning. It's really easy to get them spinning, and really learning how to help them to be succinct and get to the point. And the more you learn about how the body works and how all the systems work together, the easier it's going to be for you to do a succinct history. So I want to see if Lynn has anything else she wants to add. Lynn, I have two of you today. Wow, there's two of you on here. Two? How fun. So one of the Lynns open up
your
line.
I'm not sure which one. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. It's the first one. Okay, good. Yeah.
Great. If it's okay, Leah put a question in about what tests would you use to check pancreatic function?
The stool test tests pancreatic elastase, and there's also blood tests you can do for amylase and amylase and lipase, I think.
Okay. All right. And I have a feeling Leah and Allison will be working together on some of the labs.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
I love when
yep,
we
do that.
These synergistic connections. All right.
Yeah.
So we have 2 minutes left before this call ends. Did you have anything else you wanted to add or say to people before we hang up?
No, not at this moment. I think we've all learned a great deal, and we've gotten to know each other a little better. And if you're not already, go to the INE Practitioners Facebook group and continue to learn and support each other.
Awesome. Thank you. Introduce yourself there if you're new. So thank you guys so much for being here, and we'll talk to you again next month. Bye-bye. I'll open up your line so we can say goodbye. Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Be well.
You too.